Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome back to today's Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to me, and we are talking about the center, our programs, or about social justice. Today, we have two visitors, Archbishop Adrian Smith and Christina Raymer. Thank you, Bishop Adrian and Christina, for coming. Welcome to our radio program.
Thank you for welcoming us.
Thank you.
Archbishop Adrian Smith is the Archbishop of Honiara, the capital of Solomon Islands, Melanesia. He was born in Dublin, Ireland, and was appointed Archbishop of Honiara 30 years ago. Solomon Islands is a country that consists of a large number of islands, hence the name, and lies east of Papua New Guinea. Christina is the director of Mahitahi, the Catholic Overseas Volunteer Sending Agency, based in Auckland. She's been working with Bishop Adrian for many years, and many New Zealand volunteers have supported projects in the Catholic Diocese of Honiara and in other parts of Solomon Islands. Bishop Adrian, you were born in Dublin, and just as the Sisters of Mercy, who followed Bishop Pompalier to New Zealand, your vocation took you almost all the way to the other end of the world. When you arrived in Solomon Islands more than 30 years ago, what did you know about the islands, and how did you perceive them?
As a schoolboy, I went to Mara schools, and then later I went to the seminary, and there was one Irish priest. His name was Father John McAvoy, and he used to write some news for us. So I did know about the Solomon Islands, but I knew much more about Fiji, not Solomon Islands. So when I was appointed for Solomon Islands, it was a surprise.
Mm-hmm. The name Solomon Islands always fascinates me because of the biblical reference to King Solomon. I read that in the 16th century, a Spanish navigator named the islands Islas Salomon because he thought that they would provide him and the Spanish crown with wealth. Now, 450 years later, we hear about the Solomons as a country that is often struck by natural disasters and has suffered immensely due to ethnic tensions. I understand that the ethnic tensions of the late 1990s led to an amazing initiative, RAMSAY, the Regional Assistance Mission to Solomon Islands. An international security contingent worked in the Solomons, led by Australia and New Zealand. Can you tell me more about this initiative?
The initiative was taken by the Solomon Islands government, which really felt they needed help. And they came to Australia and asked Australia, could they help? There was a hesitancy because this kind of intervention is never easy. But thank God, Australia did agree and New Zealand agreed. And I think another 9 Pacific countries agreed to come and help. And the wonderful thing was we had men and women in uniforms, police officers and army people from all these different nations. So what Solomon Islanders saw was a whole family of Pacific people coming to help us. And that was very effective.
Did that also bring the Solomon Islanders closer together as a nation?
I think it helped us not to see the intervention as somebody intruding, but rather to see it as a help to our police force who were struggling. Mm-hmm. How to control the situation, and the big thing was to try and get people to surrender their arms.
Mm-hmm. It's a symbol of solidarity.
A symbol of solidarity is a very good way to put it, and also the code name that they gave was Help 'em Friend, which means helping your friend, and it really is what happened. We were helped by RAMSAY.
And is RAMSAY still ongoing, or do you think that this intervention is a good example for other countries?
I'm not an expert in knowing about interventions, but I think the model is a very good one. Your question is RAMSAY ongoing. I think RAMSAY very wisely is fading away rather than making an abrupt withdrawal. Mm-hmm. Fading away and continuing to help our police and continuing to be there so that people have confidence, because Solomon Islanders themselves have not yet recovered their confidence in their own police force.
That sounds very good, yeah. And can you tell me a little bit more about Ramsey? Some examples maybe of how you experienced the effects of Ramsey in your diocese, for example.
What I felt about Ramsey was they actually went out to the people. So you had Papua New Guineans, Ni Vanuatuans, people from Cook Islands, from Samoa, walking together with Solomon Island police, trying to talk to the people and trying to encourage the people to surrender their arms. And they had a program of declaring villages arms-free villages. Mm-hmm. And that was very successful because villages quickly wanted to be known as arm-free villages. And that was done because of the Ramsey presence. The local police couldn't have done it because, unfortunately, people lost confidence in them.
Mm-hmm. So the people trusted then in this multicultural, multinational group.
Yes. I think trust is the right word to use. Yeah.
Christina, you're the director of Mahitahi, the New Zealand Catholic agency that sends volunteers to different Pacific islands. You've been working with Solomon Islands for many years. Were you also involved in Ramsey?
Not directly, no. Mahitahi was established in 2002, and Ramsey entered Solomon Islands in July 2003. So it was shortly after Ramsey first began its initiative in Solomon Islands, its intervention, that Mahitahi became involved. And 2005 was the first time I went up. So about 18 months after the initial intervention. And we have really worked to follow on and build on what the initial intervention has been about. So it's volunteers supporting in all sorts of ways, in community development, youth work initially, and since then there have been architects and builders, and community development, financial managers, people, health and education professionals, so all sorts of ways. Since that time, Mahitahi has become part of Caritas New Zealand since the last 2 years. So now we are actually an agency or a subsidiary of Caritas Aotearoa New Zealand, which is continuing its involvement in Solomon Islands and going from strength to strength.
Mm-hmm. So this support intervention group set the basis for the work of the New Zealand volunteers and other volunteers who came to the country.
They did, and it was very important that the volunteers came. There was one particular volunteer came with our youth, and he came to teach us how to play soccer. And I was very convinced that sport was a wonderful way to come together again.
Yes.
And many other countries accepted that too. Mm-hmm. The idea of trying to help the islands to get back into the whole area of sport. Just recently in Solomon Islands, we had the Pacific Arts Festival. Mm. And that brought people from all over the Pacific. Now, I wasn't there for most of it. I was just there for the end. But I was very happy when I met Solomon Islanders who said to me, "Bishop, we're working together again."
Oh, that's great.
And that was a great feeling.
Yeah? Yes, I believe. Okay, for those of you who have just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/Muffin Talk or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitors today are Archbishop Adrian Smith of Honiara and Christina Raymer, Director of Mahitahi. We have talked about the Solomon Islands and the initiative Ramsey, the regional assistance mission to Solomon Islands, which was introduced to support the country in a time of fierce ethnic tensions and which have laid the basis for volunteers from other countries to support Solomon Islanders to feel closer together and to feel that they are not alone. Bishop Adrian, looking back at all these years that you've spent in the Solomon Islands, they must have been very challenging, not only when we think of the ethnic tensions that we mentioned and riots, natural disasters, but Solomon Islands, as the name says, is also a country that consists of many islands and many languages, certainly. How many languages do you have in your diocese, and how many do you have to speak in order to be able to work with the people?
We have about 70 languages in Solomon Islands. How many in Honiara Archdiocese? If you take Honiara, perhaps that 70 are there, really, because Honiara is a great mix of all the people. My Sunday congregation would probably have 30 different languages.
Oh, yeah.
Now we have Solomon Islands Pidgin.
Mm-hmm.
And Solomon Islands Pidgin is a clever thing because it's called a Neo-Melanesian language.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new language that's growing, and it's helping people to be able to communicate with each other. And the wonderful thing is it has the grammar context of the Melanesian languages. Now, you ask me how many Melanesian languages do I know. I don't know many very well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to say a few sentences, maybe in four or five of them.
Yes.
And I do that on Sundays when I'm preaching, because it helps people to sit up a little bit when they hear a few words that they recognize or they feel we're being recognized.
Yeah.
And, of course, we have Pidgin, which most people can understand.
So most people speak Pidgin, and you speak Pidgin also?
Most people speak Pidgin, and yes, I speak Pidgin. Pidgin is extremely creative. Just to give you an example, a truck ran over a dog one day in the street, and the child wanted to tell his mammy. And he ran home and he said, "Mammy, truck a ironam doggy."
And iron the dog.
Flattened the dog like he saw mum ironing the clothes. And that's the kind of thing that children can do. Children can, as it were, make new words just to meet the needs. Pidgin is very flexible.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And I also read that the most influential type of media in the Solomon Islands is the radio. Do you agree?
That's true. The audio is the most important. Visual is important too, of course, but visual has its limitations because of the scatteredness of the country. Radio can overcome that better than television. Audio is certainly a very important medium.
So you certainly feel at home here in the studio.
Yes, I have sat in front of an array of microphones like this before, so I don't feel too scared.
That's great.
We actually had a volunteer who was from a radio station in Wellington who went to work with Don Bosco Radio, which is a small community youth-run radio in Solomon Islands. So that was about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was a successful intervention.
What kind of work did he do there?
He was working with the youth volunteers who were running the radio station and helping them in developing their programs. So animation, interviewing, getting stories, a bit of journalism, interviewing techniques and music and so on. Yes.
How long did he stay?
He was there for a month.
Wow, in 1 month he trained people. Great. And, well, you already talked a little bit about the volunteers, and you've been sending volunteers for a long time to the Solomons. And could you tell me in what kind of areas they worked in, so in the radio station, and where else?
I've been working with Mahitahi for 10 years now, in the last 2 years, or 18 months, with Caritas. We have had the support of Caritas, so we've worked closely with Caritas. We respond to requests from partners in the Pacific, so in this case, Solomon Islands. And so it's in all sorts of areas, and it really depends on what they are doing and where their needs are. As Bishop has mentioned, we have worked with youth in Archdiocese of Honiara and had sports training programs that we've run in different parts of it, organised through the youth coordinator in the Archdiocese of Honiara. In the Diocese of Auckland, they saw what was happening and were so excited about it, they asked for a similar thing. So we also did some similar programs in Auckland. But since then, working with Don Bosco, which is the Salesian Order, they have a number of institutions in Solomon Islands, and in particular the Technical Institute in Honiara at Henderson. And we've had numerous volunteers going there, working in finance and administration, assisting with training and dance and music for stage productions, builders and computer IT trainers, all sorts. Another partner that we've had a significant relationship with over for a number of years is Arelego Deaf and Disability Centre. We've had an interpreter who's worked with them in 2009 for a full year and helped produce a Solomon Islands Pidgin sign language dictionary.
So there was no dictionary before. There was, and what kind of sign language did they use before?
It was a mixture of made up stuff and a bit that they'd picked up from Red Cross, which has mostly Australian sign language and other things. So it was really an attempt to kind of standardise a Solomon Islands pidgin sign language, mm-hmm. and then using a digital camera and photographing signs. So you can imagine black hands against a white T-shirt. It showed up very well. and with the word printed underneath it. And so they produced this dictionary just with pictures on an A4 sheet on digitally on a laptop. And that was printed with assistance from Ramsey. So that was just a little wee additional bit of support that Ramsey was able to do. So numerous other volunteer assignments in agriculture, working with rural training centres, has been another key support, mm-hmm. particularly in the Western Province.
And Bishop Adrian is the one that who contacts you and asks for support, or who is contacting you?
In some cases, it's the bishop directly. In some cases, it's the directors or principals of the rural training centres or Don Bosco Institute or Arelego. And in some cases, it's diocesan leaders, such as the education secretary for the Archdiocese of Honiara. Cipriano is his name, who's been working with an educationist in our in Auckland, Brenton Sholem, and that's an ongoing project. It could be all sorts of people who make the requests.
How did you get in touch with Christina?
I think through Coves, as we knew it before.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got information that Mahitahi had the various people to offer us. And one that you didn't mention, Christina, in our seminary we have a problem of our students who come into the seminary, their English is a little bit weak. Mm-hmm. So we have volunteers coming from Mahitahi who come up and they're teaching English in the seminary to try to support our young seminarians, and it's very much appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
So Mahitahi has shown itself to be able to answer many calls.
And when you were talking about the seminary, I was just thinking of 70 different languages. If you have 10 seminarians or 20, I don't know how many seminarians do you have in your seminary?
We've about 32 seminarians, and as you say, we probably have maybe 20 different languages. English now is, in the schools, it's a little bit less good than it used to be in the past because the teachers, we've very few expat teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who are teaching English, it's not their first language. It might be their third or fourth language.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing their best. But we do recognize the need to have people who can come and English is their first language,
mm-hmm.
and they're able to teach. And of course, they're speaking it all the time. Whereas in the schools, Pidgin has become so popular that even the teachers are using Pidgin.
But you're not using Pidgin at the seminary?
Oh, no, we're not using Pidgin at the seminary because textbooks are in English and encouraging people to read. Reading and writing really is not part of the Melanesian tradition. It's very much a
oral
tradition. The churches actually are the first ones to introduce reading and writing. And I had the wonderful experience of trying to teach children to write in their own language because I knew the phonetic system, but I didn't know the language.
Yeah.
So the children were telling me things to write, saying things, and I was writing on the blackboard, and then they would tell me what they meant.
Yes.
So I was learning the words from them, and I was teaching them how to write them. So it was the children teaching the teacher how to speak and the teacher teaching the children how to write.
That must be fascinating.
It was a wonderful experience. I've enjoyed it in three or four different parishes, and I I really enjoyed it.
That's great. So I hope that the priests will continue this tradition going when they go to the villages, they can practice it.
Yes, I think that we have a good tradition of wanting to use local languages.
Yeah.
And a former bishop, a New Zealander, Bishop Gerard Loft, mm-hmm. Gerard Loft.
Yes. Oh, he died in my parish.
He died in your parish. He was a wonderful linguist. And he could celebrate Mass, I think, maybe in 6 Solomon Island languages.
Whoa.
He was very, very competent. And people loved him because he could joke with them in their own language.
What is the official language of the church in Solomon's? In New Zealand, we have English and Maori and Latin. And what is the official language in Solomon Islands? Is it?
Well, to answer your question, I think I could say the official language of the parliament is English or Pidgin.
Okay.
Those two, English or Pidgin. And parliamentarians use both.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about Pidgin in Solomon Islands, it's more fluid than it is in Papua New Guinea. In Papua New Guinea, if you speak Pidgin, you must stay in Pidgin. In Solomon's, we go in and out of English and Pidgin. It's very fluid.
Yeah.
It's because it's not as well developed as the Pidgin of Papua New Guinea.
Yeah. What do you, Christina, what do you recommend to possible volunteers when they want to come to the Solomons? I was thinking of they have to know at least English, of course, but it would be good to know Pidgin for them. But what else would you recommend to the people who are interested to come?
It really depends on the assignment, and there's a huge variation in the requirements of the assignment. A significant change or shift that's happened that's relevant is the shift to short-term volunteer assignments, primarily less than 3 months. And this has happened because of localisation. So in the colonial era, there would have been expatriate priests and religious and expatriate lay people who would give a year or 2 years of their time and volunteer as teachers or nurses or whatever other professional. Those days have gone. The country has localised. Those jobs belong to local people. They need the jobs and they are doing it mm-hmm. their own way, and which is great. But often they're not doing that work as well as what might have been done because they've never had education to the same standard as what the expatriates might have, and they're not as well resourced. Mm-hmm. And there has been significant changes in technology and computers and so on, and so new ways of working, which they may not have had an opportunity to learn and develop and institute in their organisations. So we send volunteers to work with them to strengthen and build their capacity, mm-hmm. but not to go out and take over the job from mm-hmm. them. So for short-term volunteers, less than 3 months, for that to be effective, it really means that the volunteer needs to have had some experience in a developing world, ideally in the Pacific and even more ideally in the Melanesian Pacific. So when they arrive there, all of the culture, the environment, the climate, the food, and all of that does not is going to be familiar to them, mm-hmm. and they're going to be able to adapt very quickly. Otherwise, you know, it takes you the first month to work out which way is up and to adjust and so on, and you're not going to be able to work effectively.
Yeah.
So that's a critical attribute that I look for in volunteers, is people who have had experience in the developing world and ideally in a tropical or similar kind of a climate.
Yeah. So. Thank you, Christina. Bishop Adrian, you visited the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom and you heard about the amazing story of Catherine McCauley and the first Mercy Sisters in New Zealand. Do you, as an Irishman who grew up in the same town as Catherine McCauley, do you feel proud of being a compatriot of somebody who has done so much for the poor and the vulnerable and whose followers are continuing worldwide with what she once started in Dublin?
I do feel proud. I feel proud because I think that she came from a Dublin that was very poor. So she understood the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And she also understood the need for social justice. So she came well prepared.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very happy that she's made such a contribution in this part of the world. But I'd like to say New Zealand is making a great contribution in other parts of the world, like in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fruit of the Federation of Oceania.
Mm-hmm.
We are now working much more together, and we're realizing the resources are closer. They're not in Europe alone. They are in New Zealand, in Australia, and in the islands we have resources to share with you as well.
Yeah, that we come back to mahitahi, to work together as one. Thank you very much, Bishop Adrian and Christina, for your information on Solomon Islands and the work of the Catholic volunteers overseas. And just to remind you, the week of the volunteering starts on the 15th of June until the 21st of June. And I think that during this week, we should think of all those who are doing voluntary work, wherever they are. They might be in our parish, in our community, or elsewhere. I think that we have to consider of what they are doing, great job that they are doing, and what would we do without all the volunteers in the world. And maybe you think of something special to do for your volunteers during the week of volunteering. Maybe you would like to send them to a retreat or give them a voucher. We have vouchers in the Mercy Spirituality Center for any amount. And you could give a special gift to a volunteer who would like to have some time out or have a retreat, an information day, or whatever they like. And I'd like to ask you one more question, Bishop Adrian. So now you've been to New Zealand, you've been to the Mercy Spirituality Center, you've seen, you've been here with beautiful weather, and you're returning now to Solomon Islands. Do you think that you have had so much contact with us here? You think that you are as an Irishman now? Do you feel Irish still, or also Solomon Islander?
I'm lost.
You're lost.
I'm lost between these different cultures. But I do want to say I found this an exciting visit.
Yes.
And the thing I found so exciting is the wonderful mix of nationalities.
Yes.
That I'm meeting here in Auckland and in the whole of New Zealand. You've something wonderful to offer the world. There's a great blend here. And I think that blend gives you a lovely openness. And I think that's the secret of Kiwis. When they go as volunteers, they are open to the people they go mm-hmm. with. I'm happy to say that all our volunteers have related very well with the people. And that's so important, because you can only share your gifts with people if they relate with them.
Yes.
And they have related very well.
So that's great. So we have a very good response. And I hope that all New Zealanders and other volunteers who come to the Solomon Islands will have a very positive impact in the country and with the people.
They will.
Thank you very much. For any questions that you might have about the program or about the Mercy Spirituality Center, please contact us either per email at muffintalk@840@gmail.com or check out our website, www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. Or if you want to listen to this program again, please listen to www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk. And before I come to the end, I'd just like to make a few, draw your attention to some of our upcoming events in our center in Epsom. On the 18th of June, we have The Gift of Grief with Louise Thompson. Louise will use film and discussion to show how a unique group of people embrace their pain, learn to live with their loss, and now engage in life more with more compassion, courage, and awareness. It will be Wednesday, 18th of June, from 10 to noon. On Thursday, the 19th of June, Brother Roger of Tézé, this is a talk with Anne Warren. Anne will tell us more about the man who founded the Tézé community. Thursday, 19th of June, 10 to noon. And of course, Margaret Bowater. I interviewed her in May, and you can still download her interview from www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk. Her next seminar will be on Saturday, 21st of June, Visionary Dreaming, from 9:30 to 4:30 p.m. at our center in Auckland. Thank you very much for listening, and have a good day. Thank you, Bishop, and thank you, Christina.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.